Welcome to the Psychosomatic Medicine Podcast. My name is Victoria White, managing editor of the journal. It has been estimated that 1 in 5 adults experience chronic pain. It is thus a major problem for individuals and families, with important implications for clinical medicine and public health. The November-December 2018 issue of Psychosomatic Medicine is devoted to the topic of the neuroscience of pain, behavioral, developmental, and psychosocial mechanisms relevant to intervention targets. We will hear today from Dr. Mustafa Al-Absi, Dr. Christina Ottaviani, and Dr. Willem Kopp. Dr. Al-Absi is Professor of Family Medicine and Biobehavioral Health at the University of Minnesota Medical School. He guest edited the issue with Dr. Lauren Atlas of the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Christina Ottaviani, one of the contributing authors to the issue, is Professor of Psychology at the Sapienza University of Rome. Dr. Willem Kopp is the Editor-in-Chief of Psychosomatic Medicine. He is Professor of Medical and Clinical Psychology at Tilburg University in the Netherlands. First, Dr. Al-Absi, can you tell us the background and goals of the special issue?
Sure, yes. The impetus of for this special issue was actually a meeting that the American Psychosomatic Society organized in the fall of 2016 in New York City. And in that meeting, we had about 100 experts in neuroscience of pain and early life adversity among relevant themes. The meeting also had experts in psychotherapy and treatment of pain. The focus on pain is rather timely and important considering the unprecedented crisis surrounding pain and opioid addiction. We know that the prevalence of chronic pain has escalated in recent decades, as has the use of opiate analgesics to treat pain. This has contributed to this significant crisis that we are seeing and hearing about every day. When you think about it, actually, we have about 115 adults die from opiate overdose every day in the U.S. alone. So we believe that understanding pain and risk factors and mechanisms and ways to treat it using non-opioid methods would be of great public health importance. This special issue includes articles on all these facets. So to further understand mechanisms mediating the experience of pain and modulation, we included the paper by Dr. Christina Ottaviani from Italy and her colleagues, who actually did a very interesting study looking at the complex interaction between physiology and pain. In this case, they identified neuronal processes associated with baroreceptor analgesia. A very important topic that I would discuss later on, but for now, I would like to hear from Dr. Ottaviani to describe the study herself.
Thank you very much for inviting me. So the topic of our study is a phenomenon called blood pressure hypoalgesia, that is the inverse relationship between blood pressure and pain sensitivity. And this may have serious health consequences because it makes at-risk hypertensives less aware of symptoms like the chest pain that characterizes silent myocardial ischemia or infarction. But it is important to say that blood pressure-related hypoalgesia has not always been replicated, and the underlying mechanisms are unclear. Existing studies point to a role of arterial baroreceptors, for example, the artificial stimulation of carotid baroreceptor results in reduced pain perception, and also the same brain regions are implicated in both baroreceptor control and pain processing. So in our study, we wanted to test the hypothesis that systolic baroreceptor signal attenuates subjective and neural correlates of pain. And we predicted that these effects will be stronger, amplified in those with higher blood pressure. So we did an fMRI event-related study with 18 normotensive participants. And during this study, we administered painful and non-painful stimuli in sync with the ventricular systole, that is when spontaneous baroreceptor activity is maximal, and at diastole, when this activity is minimal. Painful and non-painful stimuli were determined based on the participant's pain threshold, and we asked, after each stimulus presentation, we asked participants to rate the subjective pain intensity on a visual analog scale. The results suggest, indeed, that there is an inverse relationship between blood pressure and pain perception, which is not exclusive to hypertensives, but is also present in our normotensive sample. Also, we showed that painful and non-painful stimuli were perceived as less painful at systole during baroreceptor discharge. So this suggests that the effect of baroreceptor functioning is not only on pain, but on stimulus perception in general. Painful stimuli in terms of the brain activated areas belonging to the pain matrix, so the insula, amygdala, thalamus, all structures that are also implicated in autonomic regulation. Baroreflex discharge showed activations in areas implicated in parasympathetic nervous system regulation, like the superior parietal lobule, postcentral gyrus. But the most interesting results was when we looked at if the neural responses to pain were modulated by the cardiac phase, we only found a small cluster of activation in the right parietal cortex. And this is an attention-related brain area. This finding is, however, in line with the suggestion by Gray and colleagues in 2010, who found that the analgesic effect of baroreceptor activation indeed require attention. So keeping in mind the limitations, because we only had the sample size of 18 participants, our study confirmed the phenomenon called blood pressure-related hypoalgesia and showed that baroreflex mechanism modulate activity in pain-related brainstem areas.
Dr. Kotoviani, this is very interesting. Actually, beyond the implication to hypertension and heart disease, I see your paper to be nicely complementing the other sets of papers that we have in the special issue that are related to mechanisms of pain modulation. The focus on baroreceptor activation and its role in modulating pain has been of interest to many of us in the field. So I'm so glad you are moving this work one step forward. Certainly, this new research would help us understand brain mechanisms for baroreceptor influence on pain. And again, to bring this to the topic of pain and the focus of the special issue, it's exciting to think of this research in the context of developing novel and non-pharmacological interventions that might utilize methods like baroreceptor stimulation, which, as you know, could be achieved using some simple mechanism, mechanical and other sort of physical manipulations. And if that could help us regulate pain or perceive pain as less aversive, less adverse, less upsetting, then it could help people who are suffering from chronic pain.
Indeed, when we looked at the results, we were expecting an activation in areas such as the anterior insula or the amygdala, as in our studies investigating baroreceptor functioning. But the fact that we found these attention related areas somehow support the hypothesis that the association between pain perception and baroreceptor functioning is via attentional mechanism.
So, but do you think that the attention sort of drives also the baroreflex? Because there's no plausible reason why the baroreflex should be directly driving attention processes, or am I wrong there?
So in other studies, the work by Hugo Critchley and Sarah Garfinkel, they are finding that, for example, when you present fearful stimuli at systole, when baroreceptor discharge is maximal, there is an increased perception of fear. And this has been replicated. And so meaning that baroreceptor functioning is implicated in stimuli processing, not only in pain processing, but somehow it's related in, how can I say, in directing attention to stimuli and enhancing the processing of stimuli. There is also work about other labs showing that indeed the hypoalgesia, so this diminished perception of pain in hypertension, is not only related to pain but to affect in general. So, and probably baroreflex can be involved in this perception of negative affect in general rather than just pain.
Well, this is a very interesting and stimulating area. I was wondering about the following, and this is a question to both Dr. Ottiviana and also Alapsi. Many of the papers in this issue are based on relatively small samples, ranging between in the teens to 30s per group. And the question is, like, these small sample studies give good ideas for new directions in our field, but they often are prone to non-replicability. So what is your thought on how the field in the neuroscience of pain should move forward? Should we do more in-depth studies like we have now, or are we ready for a different direction?
Yes, I agree. This is an important problem. In fact, running a study as we did with peripheral recording compatible with the scanner and synchronizing stimuli with the systole and diastole and with the scanner is really complicated. So when you want to study this specific mechanism, it's very difficult to aim for large samples, but as soon as we have preliminary data, then our goal is, of course, to replicate, first of all, with hypertensives, and then my next goal is to actually to do a meta-analysis, collecting all existing data on the topic of blood pressure-related hypoalgesia, and see if we are far enough in the field to start doing large population studies.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wiyo. This is a very good point. Our hope is actually from this experience, from this special issue, to continue to push the field toward larger, more transdisciplinary efforts that are necessary and very important step for identifying solutions to understand chronic pain and to treat it effectively. Solutions that are reliable and translatable to clinical context. As we finish our conversation today, I would like to thank our guest editor, Dr. Lauren Atlas, for her hard work on editing this special issue. And I'd like to thank the many outstanding authors who contributed to it. And I hope the issue is well received by the readership and our scientific community.
That concludes the Psychosomatic Medicine podcast about our special issue on the neuroscience of pain, published in November 2018 as Volume 80, Issue 9. To read the issue, please visit the journal's website at www.psychosomaticmedicine.org.